Hey, everybody. Welcome to In the Know with Nina. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Crowley. I'm the Director for Clinical Thought Leadership and Partnerships at CICA, where we partner with healthcare providers to offer body composition solutions. I'm excited today to be joined by Dr. William Berger. He's the founder and medical director of Northeast Medical Practice, a concierge-style internal medicine, weight management, and health optimization clinic, and he's located in Great Neck, New York, on Long Island. He's dual boarded in internal medicine and obesity medicine and certified in menopause practice. So welcome.
Thanks so much for having me, Dr. Crowley.
Thanks for being here. A fellow Long Islander, so I'm excited to talk to you about your practice. And I know when we first met, we talked about CICA because you're an excited CICA fan who's been using it in your practice. And I just love the way you were telling me about how you use it. It's very patient-centered. It's very careful to, you know, preserve the provider's time. I love that. And I really wanted to have you share some of what works for you with some of our other clients and future clients of ours.
Sounds great. I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. So yeah, I wanted to start by exploring a little bit about your practice model. I think you're doing a lot of really great things in one practice. So I know when we first started talking, you really designed this around time and how important it was for you to be with your patients for a particular time and making sure that you're careful to protect that as you grow and scale. So if you can talk to me a little bit about how that's really fundamentally changed both your patient experience and your clinical decision making.
Absolutely. So the reason that I began this practice 3 years ago was to make sure that I have enough time with my patients. I was a primary care physician working for one of the big world-class hospital systems here in the area. But in that environment where you're seeing 25 to 30 patients per day, although I tried to give my patients as much time as possible, I would run an hour and a half late. Not good for the patient experience, although they'd be happy when they got in to see me and I gave them as much time as I could. And also not good for the doctor, because then you're up charting until the wee hours of the morning because you don't have time to take care of all of that during the day. And you're also taking care of 2,500 to 3,000 patients. So it's very difficult to know them all well, and it's difficult to keep up with all of their medication refills, telling them about their lab results and responding to their questions, phone calls, and messages through the EMR. So when I opened this practice, I knew that I wanted to do things differently. So to that end, it is a concierge style practice, and that really allows me a lot of time with my patients. So I keep a much smaller panel, 10 or so percent of the number of patients that I used to have in my panel. Okay. And that allows me to see my patients when they come to me for the very first time for 90 minutes to 2 hours, depending on how complicated the history is and so forth. Some time to really build rapport and understand exactly where the patient is coming from, and also any prior records that they have, their family history, what surgeries they've had, their medications, everything that we usually do on an intake, but to get into it in depth. And also because my panel is smaller, I can have a patient come in and see me the same day if they're acutely ill with something. So instead of being told that your doctor's booked out for the next 2-3 months and you'll see someone else when you come to the clinic who doesn't know you, patient gets to see me, their doctor. And I really think that that's important as well.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I mean, 90 to 120 minutes on a first intake is great. I mean, then I imagine that makes everything else downstream feel a lot more connected, and you're able to really get to know them and design an individualized plan of care.
Absolutely. We like to talk about how we treat our patients like family, and we know them well. We know what's happening in their families, what's going on in their work, and what their children are up to, sometimes even what their pets are up to. So it really does create that nice, firm, open bond between physician and patient that allows us to really understand each other and, as you said, to develop that individualized kind of plan for each patient.
I know up in, you know, I'm from Long Island, so that's my home, but I know it's a little bit different here in Charleston, South Carolina, where I am now. But is concierge medicine becoming more prevalent there? I know there's, you know, to some extent outside the New York City area, a lot of medical providers that they can choose from. I wasn't sure if the culture there is shifting or if that's a national shift you're seeing all around anyway.
It's both. It's becoming more common in this area, and it's becoming more common throughout the country, whether you're talking about a direct primary care sort of practice, which usually is a little bit less costly and does not take any insurance, or a concierge style practice that might offer more, and will charge insurance and usually has a somewhat higher membership fee. They're both becoming popular because patients are tired of that 7-minute visit and their doctor being booked out for months, not responding to them, not helping them to see the specialist in a timely manner. All the things that used to be in medical practice in the United States 60 plus years ago. That in my practice even includes me going to the hospital, not to admit the patient, but if they call me in the middle of the night, and I talk to them, I'm available pretty much at all hours unless I'm under general anesthesia. Then we decide, okay, probably sick enough to go to the emergency department. I don't just say, okay, call the ambulance and go to the hospital and follow up with me after hospital discharge. I actually meet them in the emergency department. If it's reasonably local, I have privileges in the three of the biggest hospitals here, and I can also go to any hospital just as a visitor regardless.
Love that.
And I give the emergency department staff a full story about the patient, exactly what's been going on, their whole history, medications. Patient might be too sick to convey that. They might be older and not know their medications or have cognitive problems. And having somebody to advocate for you in the hospital can be really important. Even those of us in the medical field, when we are on the gurney in the hospital, we're just as vulnerable as everybody else. Plus, we know all the bad things that really could happen.
That's true.
So I think the hospital advocacy piece is really important. And also in the second tier of our program, we offer house calls to our patients too. So that might be older folks with many medical problems who might have trouble getting out of the house, or we just want to try to keep them out of the hospital as much as we can. And sometimes it's busy professional people who would like me to work around their schedule, come to their place of business or their home when it's convenient for them so that they don't need to come into the office. Although you never have to wait more than 5 or 10 minutes in my waiting room. It's
That's
not like
amazing.
a practice, where you might wait for an hour,
It's funny, it feels like, you know, when you went to school to do this kind of work in that very, you know, ideal version of what would it be like? I know for me to be a dietitian, what did I, you know, I probably thought I'd be visiting the home and helping people with their meals and going through their, you know, fridge or cabinets to do that work and be a lot closer to the source of their daily life. And then of course reality hit and it wasn't much like that at all, but it kind of is a little bit of a return to the ideal or almost utopian version of what we should be doing in healthcare, right?
I agree. I agree. And it really does create a better life for the physician, too. As we were chatting offline before we started recording, I had time today to research deeply some of my patients' conditions, check in with their specialists. I was interacting with endocrinology quite a bit today. And also, I'm going to be able to get home at a decent hour. Now, it does mean that. I may run into the hospital, or I may run to somebody's patient, some patient's home here and there. But really, it's a much better professional life for the clinician, and it really allows us to provide better care, and we feel more fulfilled that we're not being burned out and ground down, because you don't want your doctor to be exhausted and burned out when you go to see him or her. You want them to be fresh and happy to see you and ready to listen.
Yeah, I think the burnout piece is huge. I think there's so, you know, there's so much of that. Can we achieve sort of a work-life balance? And a lot of people don't fit feel that you can in their work. And it sounds like from what we've talked about, you're able to kind of prioritize that, and people are more open to the idea of paying for that type of a service now. So I think the provider piece is another part of really what I'm interested in hearing. So, you know, besides the schedule and all of that, you know, you kind of started to hit on that, like you're able to research their conditions, get to know their social and environmental and all of that. How else do you feel like it sort of helps support the provider changing up this work model?
Well, it also allows a lot of flexibility in terms of the type of medicine that you would practice. For example, while I do full spectrum internal medicine primary care, I also am boarded in obesity medicine, and that allows me to really deep dive into that, because I think it's so fundamental, the excess adiposity that is so rampant in the West in general, and even getting around the rest of the world, due to the, in large part, the dietary problems that we have, that really lets me get into the basis for a lot of the chronic metabolic diseases that we see. And the same thing with menopause practice certification. Now that things with the WHI studies and so forth have been, there's a bit of a different thinking about the results, and it seems that more patients would be appropriate to receive various types of therapies with regard to that. It really allows you to pivot when you have your own practice. So you can really focus on the things that you think are most important, and it gives you further professional satisfaction, I feel.
I love that. Yeah. And we talked a little bit about women's health, and it's been an interesting time, I think, in both obesity care and weight management, alongside sort of a focus on women's health. And generally, we know more women than men are generally seeking that sort of obesity care, whether or not that is how it should be. But that's an area where it's been, there's a lot of parallels, I think I'm seeing, between the obesity space and having new treatments available that are effective, and same in women's health. We were, you know, we've heard our parents' age folks were really limited for what type of hormone replacement they had available, if any, and those conversations were really minimal. So I'm sure in both of those areas, you're seeing a lot more interest. And I also love that you're able to do both together, because, you know, kind of in that specialty model, you're going to somebody for one thing and a different person for another. And with obesity medication sort of infiltrating all of these areas, and for some people, not even for obesity anymore, you can fragment your own healthcare team in a way if you're having to go to multiple people and talk about similar and overlapping symptoms, but that really might be better served with one main provider.
Exactly. And there's such an overlap between the time of menopause for women and so forth, and changes in body composition that are associated with abdominal adiposity. So there's really a lot of overlap between those two. And having your primary care doctor be your quarterback for so many things can sometimes preclude the need for specialty referral and that fragmentation that you're referring to. But also, in my kind of practice, you're able to have close relationships with your referral partners, and also try to get people in quickly and that kind of thing. So that it's, even if they have to see specialists, it isn't quite as fragmented, because I'm trying to maintain really tight communication with all of the specialists that my patients see.
Yeah, that's a good point. So how does that look when you're doing the, you know, kind of hormone replacement? I know, you know, in obesity care, GLP-1 and incretin-based therapies, is that, are you seeing a lot of people on both? Do you have, you know, kind of a subset of patients on some versus the others? And then I'd love to chat a little bit more about how body comp is driving, you know, some of those decision-making parts of your practice.
Of course. So it's a mixture. I do have patients who are on both hormone replacement therapy for menopause, and also an anti-obesity medication of some kind, often a GLP-1 receptor agonist medicine, or perhaps a dual GLP-1 GIP, and we'll probably be also getting into the triple agonist medicines soon and so forth. So of course, I have patients who are on one or the other, and some whom I'm just focusing on lifestyle for all of these things. And I really look at lifestyle as fundamental, not just for health in general, but for both obesity as well as perimenopause, menopause, because if you're not getting proper sleep, metabolically, you're not likely to be healthy, and often sleep and problems are part of menopause for women as they go through that period of time. Of course, diet and nutrition, physical activity and exercise. I have an exercise physiologist on my staff. I'm often back to the sleep, ordering home sleep studies for patients to at least save them the trouble of trying to get an appointment with pulmonary and sleep medicine, which may take months as well, to rule out obstructive sleep apnea. So I really look at the lifestyle piece as fundamental. We do have some nutrition counseling in our practice as well, and we offer some meal replacement products for people who are really busy and or who don't like to cook. And we want to try to make sure that we're managing people's stress as well, because the hypercortisolism that goes with that is really a big driver for metabolic dysfunction, for insulin resistance, and so forth. So I really focus on that whole lifestyle piece. I have a certified well coach, a health coach in the office as well, so that even though I may be telling patient, you know, do this, do that, and so forth, and I'll see you at the next appointment. When you have somebody who's helping you find ways around the obstacles in your life, whether it be family or work, whatever the case may be, and who meets with you on a regular basis, usually weekly, that's really putting the rubber to the road, as it were. In fact, weight management clinics have about 80% higher success rates when a health coach is used in the practice.
Yeah, that's great. And health coaching has come a long way from, you know, back when they first started, and there's a lot more, you know, educational component to that too. So that's fantastic. I mean, the comprehensive team with the different, you know, specialty areas being represented by experts in their field and having, you know, just sounds like that philosophy of, you know, managing all of those things. And I'm just thinking how much more sense it makes to have that all sort of under one umbrella and be able to explore all of those topics depending on the patient. I mean, that is what that sort of individualized care is all about, is figuring out what they need and trying to help meet the patient in their, you know, pursuit of those health goals. And so that's fantastic. And I know, you know, a big part of how you know, determine what you're going to offer depends on body composition in your practice. So that's been a fairly new part of your practice, right? How long have you had Sika in your clinic?
So actually, I bought it right before we opened.
You've had it a while now. Okay.
I've had the Sika bioimpedance device in the office from the very, very beginning 3 years ago. And it really is my workhorse. I use it, every patient receives a body composition analysis when they first join the practice, regardless of whether they have an adiposity issue, just to get a baseline. But for those patients where I'm really working on their weight, I like to see them on a monthly basis if possible, so that I can track both their skeletal muscle mass as well as their fat mass longitudinally, because I feel it's so important, especially with these powerful new medications, to maintain skeletal muscle mass, because our longevity as well as our quality of life, they're directly correlated, not just to our aerobic fitness, but to skeletal muscle mass as well, to decrease risk for falls, fractures, and just be able to enjoy the activities of daily living that you want to participate in.
Yeah, 100%. It's been nice seeing sort of that shift taking place. And, you know, my background is in bariatric surgery and obesity care for 20 years. And for so long, that was just not something we kind of said, you know, let's get beyond weight and beyond BMI, but it wasn't really happening in the actual clinic for the majority of folks. And so I love hearing that really being foundational. And again, you're diving into nutrition and exercise and lifestyle and sleep and all of those things with metrics that can actually be connected to that. And I sort of love the longevity as a focus when we're talking and connecting that to muscle health. I think that's much more intentional and much more satisfying, you know, that we can always be working on that, even with, you know, even another part of weight loss and weight maintenance is always so tricky, is once you get to whatever your sort of goal or, you know, intended target weight potentially is, like staying at that same weight long term is really hard to, not only hard to do biologically, but just hard to stay focused on that. So if we're focusing on, you know, reduction in adiposity and maintaining or increasing muscle mass, I think long term, those are much better goals to be focused on.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. And the way that I explain why the BMI is not necessarily the best metric for an individual on a population basis, of course, it's easy to get height and weight on patients across the country and look at BMI for that kind of purpose on an epidemiologic kind of scale. But for an individual, you really need the composition. And I, you know, kind of tongue in cheek when I explain this to my patients, I say, well, Arnold Schwarzenegger, when he was Mr. Universe, had a BMI in the obese range at 31. But of course, he wasn't actually having excess adipose tissue that he carried around. It was due to a large amount of muscle. But conversely, you can have a 101-year-old lady come into the office, and she might have a normal BMI of 19 or 20, but do the composition, and you find out that the only reason that she doesn't appear to be underweight is because she actually has too much fat mass on board, and she's actually sarcopenic, that she has too little skeletal muscle. Now, those are kind of extremes, but when you're looking at patients as they get older, maybe into their 60s, their 70s, and so forth, where it's still more actionable in terms of what you can do about skeletal muscle mass, you need to have the composition in order to know that.
Right. Yeah. I think that's really a good point. And we like, you know, sometimes it's nice to have those extreme examples of that, because that makes it very clear to the patient of, oh yeah, maybe I'm somewhere on that spectrum and in that range. And I think that's a really good way to frame that up. So I wanted to find out too, like, what are the other parameters that you talk about? I know, you know, we have 20 different things on there. You might have time to go through all of them, but I'm sure that behaviorally focusing on a handful is really where you get the most sort of get that sweet spot for the conversation. So you've talked about skeletal muscle, you've talked about body fat. I know we've talked a little bit about visceral adipose tissue, but what else are you talking about when you're reviewing the results with the patient?
So those are the big three. Of course, I want to differentiate between subcutaneous fat and the visceral adipose tissue, because the VAT is, of course, more associated with the various metabolic diseases, whether it be diabetes, fatty liver, cardiovascular disease. One of the nice things about the CICA is its segmental ability to determine skeletal muscle mass. So when I'm providing these results to our exercise physiologist, who has access to all our patient charts, he's able to see how much muscle is in each extremity as well as the torso, which can be really helpful. So that's another way that what we do with the body composition actually drives how we approach the patient. So they can see really where they need to do the most work. And also, it helps to drive our recommendations for protein consumption too.
That's great. Yeah, the segmental piece is nice. And I think, you know, people always are kind of focused on the imbalance at first, but then they'll say, oh yeah, I had an injury on that side, or that makes sense, you know, so they can kind of, you know, really start to pinpoint their particular areas for location. So yeah, location of the visceral fat and location of where their skeletal muscle, you know, lies, I think is great. And then the body composition chart is another one that sort of plots those two together. Do you use that when kind of ending that
I do use it. It's a nice visual. They usually get a kick out of it in terms of which little figure are they closer to, and so forth. So I do use that a little bit with my patients too.
And for trending, I think, you know, we talked a little bit about the treatment tracker is a newer feature of our software. I don't know if that's been something you've been able to use in your practice yet, where you're tracking the treatments
I have yet to implement that, but again, I do see most of my weight management patients on a monthly basis, so we're tracking the trends in terms of their body composition through the summary or trend feature that's on there, where you can look at that day's analysis, and then it shows you the trends ever since the beginning.
I'm going to have to show you the treatment tracker, because it's made for someone like you who's really able to sort of track and see change over time and be able to put in what they're working on from a medication or nutrition or exercise component. And then there's a new graph in there that's pretty neat. It shows you sort of body composition all in one, and you're looking at sort of weight in the middle, but how much of that is fat mass and fat-free mass. And then it breaks down the fat-free mass into how much of that is skeletal muscle from both a pounds and percentage picture. So as a snapshot and as trending, I think that's a piece you might find pretty useful.
Okay, absolutely. I'd love to chat about that.
Yeah. Well, great. So I wanted to hear, you know, I didn't realize it had been 3 whole years since you've been using our device, but what do you hope to see more of, or what do you love and want to, you know, see us dive into more? I think, you know, getting that information from our high users who are using it as, you know, as frequently as you are is part of what we're excited about, kind of responding to what your needs are next.
Sure. So integration is always so important. For example, my electronic medical record doesn't, to my knowledge, as yet integrate directly with the Cica device and its software. So that would be one thing that would be really great. There are a lot of advancements in terms of integrating a lot of wearables data and other things into the EMR. Guava is a platform that is allowing practices to do that. I'm thinking about potentially working with them to do this. So that would be something that I would love to see, where the body composition could actually be a pop-up of some kind in the patient's chart. I import all of their body composition analyses there for that day and the summary into their chart as a separate document. And I can go and pull it up that way from within the electronic medical record.
Okay.
But a kind of integration would be great.
Okay, great. Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, it sounds like body composition was made for this type of a practice. And, you know, you've really got the time to sit there and talk through that. For folks who don't have as much time or who aren't yet moving to this model, do you have any tips for how to, you know, how to start or make those conversations effective in a short period of time?
Conversations with regard to body composition?
Yeah.
So really, it doesn't take a great deal of time. First, the analysis itself is very quick, just a couple of minutes. And really, to get a high-level view of what's happening with their general body composition doesn't take a great deal of time. So in a standard busy primary care practice of 20-plus people per day, I think it can be integrated, certainly into the annual physical, where there might be a little bit more time, or if the physician wanted to have separate weight management follow-ups, even if they're only 15 minutes, it would definitely be able to fit into that kind of time frame. But it doesn't take a lot of time, and the visual nature of the output really helps patients understand it, and I think they can see it pretty quickly that, oh, you know, my fat mass is at a high percentage. My skeletal muscle mass is not. I've got quite a bit more of visceral adipose tissue than I should have. And it allows you, even in just a few sentences, to give them, I think, a lot more information and perhaps some other targets to shoot for besides just that number on the scale.
That's great. Thank you. All right. Well, if people want to find more out about your practice and you have a podcast, tell me that so we can share that with our listeners.
Sure. So the podcast is Longevity MD. That's currently on Spotify. So there I interview physicians and other clinicians in the healthcare space, as you and I are going to do shortly. And that is a great way for people to have a bit of a deep dive into particular medical topics. And you can reach out to our office, which is Northeast Medical Practice in Great Neck, New York. The number in the office is 516-604-3418. Online, we're at northeastmedicalpractice.com. And I have a YouTube channel, which is also under Northeast Medical Practice, where I have an awful lot of educational videos for patients and people out there in the public to learn from. And of course, we're on all the various social media platforms as well.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being here and sharing about your practice and your patients. I think you've found a really nice sweet spot for both. And I love hearing how body composition has made that a better fit for you. So thank you so much.
Thank you for taking the time today, Dr. Crowley. And I really appreciate everything that the folks at CICA are doing, because it really is a wonderful tool to have in the practice.
Oh, well, thank you. We appreciate you.
Okay. Take care.